Welcome to Football Is Nice with me, Russell Brand, and Gareth Roy. And what a fantastic conversation I anticipate today. We're going to be talking about transfers and the usual craziness that that surrounds the transfer season. Silly season, Harry Redknapp would call it. We'll be talking about transfers as they once were in more innocent times. And we'll be talking about Stormzy's acquisition of another football club. Could it be the next Wrexham? Is it going to be on Amazon Prime? As well as, in a way, we're placating Gareth Roy by talking about Hull City, which is the football team and town, city, that he supports and is indeed from. Thank you very much for all your comments about Simon Jordan. We'll be going through some of those in a minute. But it's nice to welcome back you, Gareth.
Is it?
Yeah, I miss you.
You don't want Simon every week.
Not every week, Simon. So, that's a lot, because remember, I'm one of those people that's a bit like Simon Jordan, sort of intense and everything. And then, like, while I'm being that, there's another one of them there.
Yeah,
it's a lot to deal with.
I know.
It's intense.
I mean, I literally know.
Because you deal with me every day. Frankie, best conversation I've heard about football. Valid points from both. What I did enjoy about the conversation is we thought, I suppose the nature of the discourse, if I could use such a grand word, was I was saying the problems in football emanate from its ongoing commodification and commercialization, and it at some point it will kill the goose that lays the golden egg, which is the romanticism, tribalism, populism, beauty and grace that's somehow enshrined and interwoven within the game. And Simon, I suppose, says that he doesn't really think that's true, although we sort of tended to agree on quite a lot of the most fundamental principles, like if Saudi Arabia keep buying up players, they'll end up being a league there. Mm. If you keep having disproportionate power, teams like Man City, that you'll end up having a Super League. What do you think about that general argument, mate?
I guess it's like, what is the line, isn't it? You know, you think, what's the... I mean, obviously, we had the World Cup where there was so much talk beforehand of, you know, should it be staged there? The issue with the workers, people dying, people like Gary Lineker saying all sorts of things, people not showing the, you know, networks not showing the opening ceremony. There's all of that. And yet it became one of the best World Cups in history, I think you could argue. Some of the best games ever in the history of the international game. And so there's a tendency after something like that to kind of feel like it's literally, it can accommodate anything. It could be put on the moon, it would accommodate that. I don't know if that's true. I mean, I think in terms of formatting, you could well see a time where maybe that 45 minutes could be broken up. Who knows? I just wonder, what's the thing where people... I mean, obviously we saw it with the Super League, didn't we? When then the Super League was going to start, fans rebelled, and ultimately that movement was crushed for the time being. You wonder maybe what is the point that... Are they just trying to incrementally get to the same place anywhere, just in a slightly slower fashion?
I reckon, and ultimately they'll just reconfigure their plan, pivot slightly, and, as you say, execute the same idea. There must be something in football's essence that is pretty foolhardy for it to, as you say, endure even the overt commodification that the World Cup particularly exemplified, although on reflection I would say that the West moralizing about Qatar is ultimately a disingenuous and, what do I want to say, Occidental, and almost you could go so far as say a supremacist stance. This is one of the things I love about football, is it provides a lens through which we can analyse world affairs. The kind of neoliberal establishment will use its overt virtue signalling around cultural issues to point out that, oh, we're different than them. But what I suppose a counter-argument is, hold on a minute, this is an imperialistic and exploitative game from nations that have colonised and exploited the world, even and specifically the region that is known as the Middle East, where you're making these kind of judgments from even now. And top of that, there's the hypocrisy of still doing the bloody event there in the first place, and indeed individuals that spoke out attending. Not showing the opening ceremony was a proper cake and eat it move.
Yeah,
you know, we're
agree.
Willing to make sacrifices, but not sacrifices that mean anything, and therefore not sacrifices, they're gestures. And
the problem wasn't Morgan Freeman and his hand, was it?
Wait a minute!
As long as we don't show Morgan Freeman and his hand, then we'll be fine.
The issue with the United Arab Emirates and its richness in fossilised fuels is Morgan Freeman's hand. If you look here at the Shawshank Redemption, you can see that Morgan Freeman's character, Red, has got a disproportionate influence on world affairs. Here's Morgan Freeman executing Abdul Khashoggi, the Saudi Arabian journalist.
Jamal.
Yeah. Jamal, thanks,
Jamal
mate.
Khashoggi, yeah.
Bit of racism there.
Not to get too political necessarily, but we've talked recently about the way in which CNN and MSNBC said that they won't show Trump's post-arraignment
speech. Yeah, it's the
speech.
Same thing.
And it's like, well, after like years of profiting from Trump and then pushing all the Russiagate stuff and all that, then you're going to say, well, this bit we're not going to show, but we'll continue talking about it in the rest of the time.
And we'll continue bundling up your data and selling it more even than porn sites do. We will report on Russiagate in a biased and insubstantiated way. Essentially, the mainstream media cannot claim to be doing anything for a moral reason. And that's whether it's talking about like matters within football or matters within news and politics, because they don't have a leg to stand on when it comes to that set of criteria. The thing that's romantic and beautiful about the game at some point surely will be extinguished. And I wanted to talk more about, like, this is what I said in the end, because you know what he's like, Simon and Jordan, he's hectoring, he won't shut up. I think I do listen in the end, don't I?
Yeah.
Thanks. So there's a bit, in the end, I just sort of basically shouted, I think the same as that's happened in Saudi Arabia, that you should put as part of a manifesto, if we are elected, we will reclaim and renationalize all British football clubs and then return ownership to the community. Now, I know that's like in some ways a preposterous suggestion, because it would mean, what? Hold on a minute. These economic entities, these commercial businesses that have been acquired in some cases by nation states, in other cases by big companies like FSG, and you know, wherever they're owned, you're saying you're going to seize these assets. But that is what happens. Like, you know, that's, you know, in Saudi Arabia, I'm sure they purchased them. But what about with the, you know, when we privatized all of our municipalities, like the gas and the water and the electricity, all those things have been built by taxpayers' money. That means we owned it. Then they sold it back to us as privatized commodities. So I don't think it's absolutely ridiculous. And the reason I'm saying it is because, of course, that's part of a earth-shattering model or an economic shattering model, because of course then it's like, well, are you going to pay the players in the same way?
Sure.
It's all going to totally fall apart.
Yeah, it'll
because
change.
It's an attempt to sort of popularize ideas and also a sort of a Trojan horse for numerous other ideas, but bringing them into the heart of the popular entertainment arena, I suppose. But saying, like, you would own Liverpool, you would own Ipswich, you would own, and like, you know, the community would run it electorally, you would elect a board, you'd run it that way, you'd have to look at what, you know, obviously, you know, the commercial and broadcast partners are all going to fucking drop out the minute you do something like that. Because even when someone like Jeremy Corbyn, who was like a left-wing politician, who was for a minute in our country, was like our Bernie Sanders, but he became the leader of the party. Like, people were like, we're pulling out, we're not going to have that kind of stuff, you know. But all of that is revealing that whole process of like the broadcast, right, we'll broadcast it ourselves then. Or what it would do is it would be seismic. It would be an incision for something that just seems sort of quite populist. It creates a sort of waves of kind of beautiful chaos. That's why I like it. I know it's mad though.
Yeah, no, as you say, it would mean fundamentally changing all the apparatus around it as well in order for that to work. There's so many things that will be affected by that. And I was literally just thinking about Declan Rice and his kind of ascendancy and how amazing Declan Rice has become, the fact that all, both these clubs, Man City and Arsenal, want to spend over 100 million quid on him at the moment. You'd probably say that without the money spent on West Ham, that they can invest into their youth setup that develops players like Declan Rice, that maybe one of the arguments would be, well, we wouldn't get players as good as that. And I guess that would be a good argument. But that's what I mean. Everything would have to
Everything
change.
Falls apart. Because aren't we at a point, though, where it's like, well, like Declan Rice, understandably, I'm a West Ham fan, of course. Like Declan, and thanks for them seats from Upton Park. That's a really great present. Gareth got me for my birthday, 2 seats from West Ham's former ground and beloved cathedral, Upton Park, aka the bowling ground. You can buy seats from it after they smashed it to smithereens to buy flats on it, basically for no reason other than money. And anyway, I've got a couple of them seats now. I want to find out where they are. Perhaps over the coming weeks, we can locate exactly where they were and then find someone that sat in them seats, then bring them around and allow them to do a little fart on that seat and say, there you go, what comes around goes around.
There was some chewing gum under the seat.
Was there?
I took that off because I thought,
that's priceless. That could have had my own DNA. What if I'd already? That would be one of those beautiful stories if it was your own bubblegum. You know when you hear those stories, and did you know it was the very same person? You know those stories. Post us one in the chat, will you? Anyway, mate, like, with more parochially, like, you get 105 million quid for Declan Rice. You know, like, what are you going to spend trying? Is he replaceable, essentially, a player of that quality? Maybe even if we get that lad out of Ajax, or we get James Ward-Prowse out of Southampton. Sorry, James.
Calvin Phillips.
Right. Well, yeah, that starts to make a little bit of sense. But even then, it's sort of like, for like, I mean, what's the point? What's the point of it all? What's the point? Or Harvey Barnes out of Leicester. There's like things that could be exciting about that money, but I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is like, I hanker after a time where you might have Billy Bonds or, you know, even Mark Noble spend their whole career at a club. This, because why? What is it? What is it? As I always like, whatever subject you're interrogating, what is it? It's like, them players are the representatives of a community. We vicariously live through them, and for a minute, victory and loss is simple and makes sense with all the complexity within the game. We want them to win. We don't want the other team to win. It's all sort of manageable for a moment, and yet you gain access through ceremony. You gain access to emotions that are sort of deeper than on paper I might cry. I'm overwhelmed. I'm overjoyed. The moment that David Moyes puts the medal around his father's neck, it provides you with a kind of magic. And when you reduce it all to numbers, you're pulling. I can't help but think that sooner or later the thing itself will pull up. But I guess I'm not saying, why don't we go back to the days where they're wearing sort of big mad leather boots like loaves of bread and kicking around a human head instead of a ball.
Yeah, it's that argument, isn't it, that they always give with like technology and why these kind of big tech companies have been allowed to kind of maraud around the world and colonize everything and everyone. And the argument is always, well, it's progress. What do you want? You do not want progress. This is why they should be allowed to kind of keep doing what they're doing. And I guess, but then there is a counter argument to that, is, well, what price do we pay for that progress? And could it be argued that it's not progress in every sense?
I don't actually even want progress, because I feel that there are false markers of progress in medicine and technology that distract us from elsewhere stagnation, moral, spiritual stagnation. And it would be nice if the progress was not somehow... I thought this phrase when visiting a very elite school recently, where I noticed conversationally the phrase, we're so lucky. People kept saying they were lucky. I thought, privilege is hoarded luck. And all this progress is, it's contained. Yes, there is progress. Of course, you know, you could, you know, like, even, you know, when people hop back and say, would the, like, a sort of team like Nottingham Forest, who, when they had their two consecutive European Cup wins, would that Nottingham Forest team beat Man City? You sort of think, no. Because, like, you know, you imagine, like, the Forest players was, like, Martin O'Neill, whatever. Like, they're, like, probably drinking booze almost at half time. And, like, these are athletes. There's so many actual, that is actual progress. Their diet, the use of technology, those things, like, that's all sort of wonderful, but has some majesty been lost? Are we more connected to the game? The very fact that a club like Nottingham Forest was able to win the European Cup is not like what it depends. What we have a quantitative perspective on reality rather than a qualitative perspective of reality. Yes. We can quantify and measure all things, but essence itself, it cannot be measured. It can only be felt. And like your point, Gareth, that in spite of everything, it's still magic. It reminds me, I've said this before because it's always something I thought about a lot. Like Lester Bangs, the Rolling Stone journalist, wrote about seeing Elvis Presley towards the end of Elvis's life in Vegas. And he went to sort of take the piss, like, oh, Elvis Presley is no longer the king of rock and roll. He's this joke figure in a bejeweled wine gum covered jumpsuit doing karate kicks and that. And like Elvis comes out with him mad scarves and all that stuff. But he said that when Elvis sings, he said like his hair stood up on end and he shivered, because there's something in that man. Yeah. There's something that he was able to convey. There is a magic, there is a majesty, there is a beauty, there is an essence. And that's the reason to sort of argue for that progress being made there as well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, ultimately, I think that magic does come from us. It comes from our relationship with those players, our relationship with our own community.
Yeah.
That's where it comes from. The progress is a side issue, you know. Even whether or not players are technically better than what they used to be, you could say that the fans of Nottingham Forest with those two European Cup wins would have shared the same amount of joy as West Ham fans just did then, or Man City fans have done winning the treble. You know, that's what It doesn't change.
I like what you say that it's between us, because even to say with the Elvis example or the football example, the audience are participating.
Yeah.
You're not just passively sort of like that. And that is more what's going to happen if the games are sort of... But he did say, Simon Jordan, that geography is irrelevant at this point because it's a broadcast medium. Of course, they might... You know, you can envisage a time where games are being played in Qatar, games are being played in Malaysia. And then I suppose, gosh, there's an argument for, well, why shouldn't it be? Why should they not own it? This is a global... And I suppose the argument is because it's all for fucking money.
Well, yeah, it's all for money. And it's, I guess... What we know is, because we know it's all for money, I think it's about what you're conscious of. Once you know that this is all for money, can you honestly enjoy the FA Cup final played in Qatar as much as you would it played in Wembley? Maybe you can, but I feel like there's some knowledge there. I mean, is it the Spanish Cup is now played, I think, in Qatar. And I've watched it, the cup final. I think it's already happening there.
Shit.
And you do watch it and think this does have a disconnect. And I guess kind of what I think about is nationalism is used when it's convenient, but not when it's not convenient.
Brilliant.
You know, so there's one way it was just like, no, nationalism is good, and that's why we go to war, and that's why we arm our military, and that's why we spend this on the nuclear this, and that's what, you know. But then when it's, oh no, it's convenient for us commercially, nationalism isn't a thing, and everything, the game should be played all over the world, and it's about embracing different cultures and this, that, and the other. It's like, well, no, that's, you have to have a principle. You have to have, well, what is it? What is nationalism about?
Groucho Marx's famous line, those are my principles, and if you don't like them, I have others. Like that, they'll just apply whatever principle is expedient to achieve the desired objective. One of the things we talk about a lot on here is the success of the Wrexham project, and I always try to extract my petty personal jealousy from my ability to commentate on it, and now my jealousy has once again been roused because Wilf Zaha, the Palace player, and Stormzy, the grime and hip-hop artist, have acquired AFC Croydon. I guess Stormzy's from around there, I suppose. Is that right? And he's acquired Croydon Athletic, a three-person consortium comprised of Zaha, Stormzy and Danny Young's exchange contracts with the existing ownership of AFC Croydon to acquire the assets of the club. Now, like, there's going to be boyhood dream stuff, I'm assuming, there. And, like, again, what's the point of judging? Because really, the main thing it makes me want is to buy a football club,
right, yeah,
which I've sort of wanted to do for ages.
Definitely a couple,
I mean,
of
did
years.
You know that I tried to, when I wasn't good enough to be in the football team at school, I started a football team. Did you know that about me?
I did not know this.
I started a football team. I've still got the photos of the football team. Put it in the,
what
local,
was it
in
made
the local
up of?
Paper. Dollies, mice, old clock parts. There was a leaf in goal. He was good. Very brave. He broke his neck in the cup final, but he played on. He played on with that broken neck. Little Sabutio man. No, other lads from my year poached them out of like existing clubs like Grey's Tigers and Grey's Harriers, I think they were called.
Wow.
Like,
you started
start up,
a franchise.
Got a photo in the local paper. I am Saudi Arabia. Came in there with my dirty billions.
Did you offer them like big contracts and things? How did it work?
I did, I think, offer him some contracts. Like, and I got a lot of good players. Like, one from a low year, Jeff Lewis. He played Bugsy Malone in the Bugsy Malone Where I Was Fat Sam. Good little actor, Arsenal fan. cracking little actor, lovely player.
How was he up front, though?
Not good. Not good. Too much pressure. Balked it. No, he was good at that as well.
Wow.
Oxy, he was in the team. David Evans, who I met recently at an airport after dreaming about him. He was there in midfield. Very beautiful player. Classic player. Beautiful. For David Platt, like technical player. Didn't have too much pace, but very, very skilled and industrious
footballer. What were you then? Were you the
manager?
Chairman,
I'm not the team. I'm not
manager.
Good enough to be in the team.
Right.
Sole reason I'm doing it to get my dad's approval.
What did you tell your dad about it?
Yeah, I told him.
Well, I'm the manager.
What are you doing?
Guess what, Dad? I'm the manager of a football team.
So good enough. What are you going to do, mate? Be in goal. And I've got my old West Ham seats now up at my wellness area. Finally, I found my place in this world. I'm a man who does ice baths and sits in former seats at Upton Park pontificating on the cultural meaning of football, the effing meaning of it all. So, look, I suppose... I sort of want to, but now, because Stormzy's done it and Ryan Reynolds has done it, at this point, it's like, I mean, it's not McDonald's, it's not Burger King.
Right, it's wimpy, isn't it?
This point, it's bloody wimpy.
In every sense.
Like, it's a is a hamburger that's been made by your mum. Like, mum, can I have a McDonald's? So we'll make a McDonald's here. It's like, it's a bird's eye beef burger between two bits of Hovis with ketchup on it, Tesco value ketchup, being chomped down into on the settee under a Superman bedspread, not even a duvet.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it sucks, doesn't it? Yeah, I don't know. I suppose, look, what it is you just got to stay true to who you are and not worry about what's going on in the world and stay true to your principles that are somehow some bizarre collision between spiritual utopianism and a kind of economic and political pragmatism derived from anarchism.
Mm.
That's what you've got to do.
You have to do that. And I guess also you kind of hope that, like, these being, I guess Zaha must be local as well from Croydon.
Right. And also, you can't begrudge Stormzy and Zaha and Danny Young there.
No. And like, if they are locals, so then you'd think, well, they'd want the very best for that club. It's not like a cynical move, is it? You know, it is, I guess, locals who've done well taking the club back.
Look, and this is not a critique on either the Wrexham project or this one, but the cynicism is baked in institutionally.
Yeah.
It's unavoidable. It's unavoidable. And I know that we all participate in that, whether it's with whatever endeavour we do. You know, we do this podcast because we love it. We know that on Rumble, primarily, our content has to be establishment attacking content that can attract people from the left and the right. And we're able to do that because we believe that both political parties are corrupt and unable to represent people. And we do this because we love football. But still in the back of my mind, I think, oh, we've got to grow the views, we've got to have more people listen to it. What are the assets? What's our social media program? Are we optimizing correctly about it? Should the thumbnails be better? Is that graphic appropriate anymore? Should we do that jingle again? I'm like it. That's why I always sort of thought about myself. That's why I thought that I should be a participant in this crazy thing. I don't mean purchasing football clubs in this instance. I more mean a global revolution. It's because I know what they are like. Mm. I know it. I know the flavor of, like, that kind of egotism and that kind of urgency to kind of conquer and move forward. I understand it. None of us are free of it. It's immersive. It is the aquarium in which we live. It's become our environment. That is Mark Fisher's dialectic on the subject. It's so immersive and totalitarian that you cannot not be within it. And Courtney Love actually pulled me up on this because who I'm friends with, he uses Kurt Cobain as an example. And I sort of said to her, I don't think he doesn't claim to understand Kurt Cobain in the manner in which you as his wife did, God rest his soul. But he's saying that the figure of Kurt Cobain almost represented a culture that understands its own, the sort of futile loop in which it's locked.
Yes.
That nihilism and despair sells on MTV. Mm. And the more you decry the system, the more the system is able to present that as a product. Like the famous Bill Hicks bit, he's quit putting a goddamn dollar sign on everything on this goddamn planet. Oh, the angry dollar. We can market that. That's a very useful market. You know, like that. Yeah. There's nothing that cannot be mobilized. The plasticity of the system is all immersive. And I guess that once you have that perspective, you can perhaps spend too much time bemoaning that, oh, Wrexham, though, isn't it just a Disney project? And maybe it's just easier to go, well, the people at Wrexham are happier, the football club's happier. But there's another point that it raises that I'd really like your take on, Gal. It's like that, isn't it mad? Because I brought this up with Simon Jordan, fucking talk so much to the geezer. I'd love to talk to him again. I love him. I think he's fantastic, actually. But, like, I'm sometimes feel like, no, I've got to get to what I actually mean, though. And, like, what I actually mean is, isn't it mental that you can have Conor McGregor fight Floyd Mayweather? You can have KSI, a YouTuber, fight Logan Paul, a YouTuber, both obviously very fit, potent fighters. Now you have the Wrexham team go over and play against, like, I feel like they maybe even played the US national ladies and beat them, like, you know. So now sport, the thing that almost the defining thing of sport is it's meritocratic. It's like this team is in a division with this team. These are the best players. Now you can just go in goal. It's Will Smith. You know, like, just starts off casting it and, like, messing with the actual, again, the essence of it. And for me, I can't help but seeing this something of the sort of post-modernity itself. Everything is falling apart into a kind of madness.
I think it's also maybe the speed at which it's happening. I read an argument for why, again, to highlight what you said about the hypocrisy around it, that, you know, there's all this talk about Saudi Arabia at the moment and its clubs buying up Premier League players. And you could argue that some of them are Premier League players who are coming towards the end of careers, but you could also, some aren't. They're mid-career and like good players, and it just seems mad that they're going
to
Saudi Arabia.
For those of you watching this on Rumble, those players are up there.
Here we go. And
so, what's the most notable one is a man from City there, Bernardo Silva, right?
If Silva goes, I think Neves has gone.
Oh, yeah, Neves from Wolves.
He's like 25, 26, you know, very good player.
Pre-peak footballer.
Absolutely.
Do you think there's a sort of, not racism ain't the right word, but like a kind of assumption that, you know, because it used to be America, right? It used to be like, for a minute, it was America. When you're past your prime, yeah. Go America and have a sort of a payday holiday. Yeah. And then it was China for a minute, but it didn't quite catch on China.
It's had been Russia
Russia's
as well.
Had to go.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And so what do you think, Saudi,
well, I just think, you know, from what I was reading, this person pointed out that, what are we saying that the Premier League, I mean, we all remember when the Premier League happened and the Sky money came in. And that was like a revolution for football. There was the point where Sky were even going to buy up Manchester United. You know, that deal, again, fans revolted against that. But it's not like they didn't try to do it. And now everything seemingly happening so quickly, and these transfers are happening, and it, like you say, I can see what you're saying about the speed at which it's happening. But maybe it's just something that's been happening for a longer period of time. We it's hypocritical for us in this country to an extent to say, oh, I can't believe Saudi Arabia paying all these players massive wages, when that's literally what we've been doing. We've been taking players from their countries of their origin, where they could have been plying their trade at the clubs that they were born, but we've been literally paid them massive wages to come over and make this Premier League what it is.
Why shouldn't Didier Drogba stay Ivory Coast, make Ivory Coast football spot on?
Sure, so many examples of that happening that, you know, again, the hypocrisy factor of this is... Yes, okay, there's all sorts of ways we can say Saudi Arabia, this, that and the other. But as we know, to go up to politics, America will keep selling them arms. You know, it's ridiculous.
And it's the same argument as the World Cup argument. You can't say it without, like, claiming that there's some sort of superiority. Except, I suppose, in sporting terms, the Premier League is... measurably, somehow, the best league, the best players, the best managers, the most money, and those facts, the facts that those are concomitant facts is hardly a coincidence.
Exactly right.
But you're right, you can't make a moral condemnation of Saudi Arabia and their attempt to use simply the pre-established means to organise their own deal. Yeah. Like, well, you're doing this thing, we're doing it. You better not do it. There's sand everywhere. Can't do that. There's petrol under the ground in the holy name of God. Worth tagging this Harry Kane to Bayern Munich. Again, because of my baked-in prejudices, I don't think Bayern Munich is the right sort of club for Harry Kane, because Bayern Munich is a one-club league. I know, like, Bayer Leverkusen or...
Well, Dortmund nearly
Dortmund
won
nearly
it.
This year.
It was last game of the season. They threw
sort
it away.
It out too
threw
cool.
it away, Dortmund. So, such a shame. They just needed to win and they didn't.
It's weird, isn't it, that? I mean, it's weird, isn't it? Because you obviously, an argument that is continually being made is that out of the Premier League is in danger of being capsized by the superiority of Manchester City. And yet, at the end of the day, only 5 points between them and Arsenal. 5 choked points.
But is that because they just needed to do enough?
They calmed down a bit afterwards.
They lost to Brentford, was it last game of the season?
Right.
You know, I just feel like they got to a point where
even
like,
that 5 points ain't indicative.
It's not fully.
So that, then what
I
about
see,
the
I
Bayern
totally
Munich
see your
thing
point.
Then?
The thing about Bayern Munich, again, and I don't know enough
then
about...
they won the last 11 or something.
They have, and obviously, you know...
Don't go and play for a team that's won that... Like, I mean, that's like, Harry Kane wants trophies, understandably, because he's a prime athlete. He's the highest goal scorer this country's ever had for the national team.
Correct.
He'll likely break Alan Shearer's record in the top flight.
If he stays, yeah.
So, if he stays. So, though, but sort of mentally, psychologically, to sort of solve the problem of not having won trophies by going to a club that always wins trophies, in a sense, what kind of personal achievement do you get from that?
I don't know, but then Man City have won 4 out of the last 5. Paris Saint-Germain, you could say that's definitely a one-team league. You don't want to kind of be offensive, but in terms of their might, they are. There aren't Barcelona, and obviously Real and Barcelona vie between them at the moment, which is a good thing, although there's all sorts of stuff going on between
Serie
those clubs.
Serie A, great for Napoli to
yes.
win that. It seems that... Yeah. But because, actually... Italian football, because of corruption, has been, there's been a lot of interventionism, hasn't there, mate? Like Juventus bounced down a couple of leagues and stuff like that. So, in a sense, aren't we seeing, isn't it like quite possible that someone, some erudite figure, so they should get someone like bloody Simon Jordan actually to head it up instead of having someone from JP Morgan. What would their interest be in this Super League? What do they traditionally do over at JP Morgan? Couldn't someone come along and persuade you, look, if Man City, 4 out of the last 5 times, have won it, if, you know, Barcelona and Real, if even in Italy there's only a couple of teams that are capable of it, and Bayern, to make the national leagues more competitive, doesn't it make sense to create this national Super League, this global Super League? Don't you think that the argument, the momentum of the argument, is self-evident through the figures?
Yeah, I guess the thing with that is, I mean, that's a kind of cynical way of, you're going to establish like a new, I don't know, there's a dominant 10 teams, and then what's going to happen to all the other teams? I mean, I don't know.
They don't get to play because that's their cup final.
Then you're depriving,
right.
Then it's like pulling teams out of their own national leagues. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it is going that way. It is worrying to an extent. I suppose as a fan, it's how much do you want to hold on to, tradition? I mean, how important is tradition? I mean, a lot of people would say it's extremely important.
I agree. And in fact, that's the point we were making, earlier in our chat. Excuse me. And I know we basically agree. And the conversation I was having with Simon Jordan. So if we've established that principle that we don't want the natural migration to be towards an elite league, even though it's pretty plain that that's formatively already present, then there is a necessity for regulation. What some people say is, regulation on transfer spending or wages or whatever, but that's too minor, isn't it?
Yeah. It doesn't even work. I mean, look at Chelsea. I mean, that's not even working. They're just giving players 8-year contracts.
They evade it.
Exactly. So they can spread those transfer fees.
That's why this podcast works for you. If you're an American who don't even know much about football, I mean, obviously when we start talking about Barry Fry, in a second you might become somewhat confused, but we're all confused by Barry Fry. But isn't it the perfect model to understand reality? We're introducing some legislation to prevent, for example, people in Congress trading stocks and shares. But what if their family member does it? That'd be all right. So yeah. That's passed in. Whenever there's regulation or legislation, it doesn't do the job that the rule was supposed to do. It just gives you the ability to say, we made a rule. You said that you wanted a rule. We beat Big Pharma this year. Is Big Pharma going to be meaningfully penalised, or is there just a handful of drugs that are going to be regulated and the pharmaceutical industry will adjust to make other products profitable? They will still have the same lobbying power. They will still have the same donation power. Sorry. Yes, basically. And the same thing happens with football, like as Gal's just explained. Chelsea... Sorry.
Wow.
Out of control.
That's a record number, I would
suggest.
Yeah,
no. Well, I've drinking a lock and butcher. I'm very excited.
Getting a bit excited.
In
yeah.
some cultures, that burping is considered to be like a shamanic sort of transition. In others, it's actually just bad manners.
Just manners, isn't it? Yeah.
In our one, it's just actually appalling poor taste. I mean, significant amount of the air in this room now is my farts and burps,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it
We're
is.
We're living in my
I
farts.
I can confirm.
An eyewitness confirmed. All right. Well, listen, in a sort of a welcome pang of nostalgia, let's tee up dear Barry Fry, who was an old school journeyman manager. I think he managed Peterborough, Southend. Yep. I know he managed for a while. And he's one of those figures who I think entered into when reality TV became a thing in our country. There was through Big Brother, a show that I was a host of one of the sort of satellite shows of. And there were weird reality shows like Driving School that followed people being bad drivers. And, that it went on and on. And I feel
that
like
that wasn't starring you as well, was it?
I was a lady called Noreen in that. And there was and I guess Barry Fry, I feel like, became sort of a bit famous because I guess there was some sort of fly on the wall, as they were known in our country, documentary that followed him as he managed various football clubs. And I remember, I used to love shit like this, and I'm not surprised that things like All or Nothing are just massive global products now, whether it's for NFL or the EPL, but people just love this stuff.
Documentaries about football, what's not to like?
What's not to like?
Yeah.
Heartbreaks, thrills, chills. It's everything you want, isn't it? Insider information, mad quotidian details about people eating beans on toast. Dele Alli specifically in the Spurs one. That was. I mean, it gives you so much. Like, it's rewarding. And in fact, you know, this Wrexham thing, I suppose, do you know what it is like, you know, with that Wrexham thing, sort of thing, like, I sort of might have nearly done that.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not
more
beyond...
about a missed opportunity,
it's a missed opportunity. It's greed. It's self-centred greed. That's what's motivating me right now. Let's have a look at Barry Fry, because as we enter this frenzy of transfers where Declan Rice might go to Arsenal or even Man City, which is just seems like ludicrous stockpiling, just flinging him like Come into on. A harem. Like, he might as well just, like, eunuch him off and bang him up for a sultan. That's probably the kind of occidentalism that we're trying to prevent, actually. But in any event, this is, in a sense, a more innocent time, but in another way, a more disgusting time where transfer deals were carried out with incredible bravado and casual, lackadaisical Cockney slang.
Next on his wanted list, the Wickham striker, Miguel de Souza.
Mate.
Oh, best. Oh. It's barely bothering to separate those words, is he? How are you, mate? It's like when someone plays a saw on a talent show. Like,
Your goals don't put us down. Hello, mate. How are you?
He's in for some hard bargaining.
Who's talking, you man?
Sean Bean.
Sounds like Sean Bean.
Sean Bean,
yeah.
Is that Sean Bean?
Yeah. I think really we're looking at 850, 950.
Now, look, I bet that's 2000 and something, and everything's so metal, 1997. Old. Like, that might as well be 1950. Look at that geezer. You would never have a football agent like that now. That's an accountant. That's a local chartered accountant, that geezer. You couldn't have him now, little, like, people swaggering about in a silk shirt, 50 million quid, just arrive on a yacht like George Mendes, like, powerful enough to get the whole Portuguese national team into one football club. Look at that agent there. He just goes home and has a Findus crispy pancake, doesn't he? Like, on a chair from a garden centre.
Yeah,
like,
his little tray.
Oh, I've got my little tray, actually. Right, I've done a good transfer deal tonight. What's that, love? I did a good transfer deal today.
I'll expect an extra pancake for that, please, darling.
Well, how about another extra slice of that Wolves Viennetta? Oh, no, you'll watch out for your heart.
No. You ain't going to get that. Fucking hell, are you sure? But you ain't going to get that. I'm desperate for you, but I couldn't go nowhere near that. First year, 550. Second year.
By the way, it's pounds. Like 550, not 550 grand. Like, what? That's like, what? Declan Rice, who I love, turned down 200 grand a week. Like,
wow.
West Ham is still run a bit mad by David Sullivan in his bizarre Russian attire. He like sort of said, like, he like just went, we offered him 200 grand a week last year, he never took it. He's going. Because while Declan was saying stuff like, you know, this, we'll see.
Yeah,
and then we're all like, oh, maybe he's going to stay. Maybe
you
he'll
idiots.
Stay.
I just want to believe this, so I'll believe it.
No, like, meanwhile, David Sullivan's like briefing like the press directly, like, I think texting like Jim White, like, we've offered him 200 grand a week, he's going, he's definitely going.
Six. Third year, 650, plus 10 grand for 30 goals.
Down in the fire factory. I mean.
All competitions, each season.
Supposing you have a survival bonus. You'd love that, survival bonus.
We had like a survival bonus, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? Like George Mendes, I reckon, like the agents now, sports agents now, I reckon they actually get their penis and balls out during conversation.
Terrifying people, I imagine.
They're all balls and penises, all shaved, and they oil them up with like some sort of like real sort of essential oils. Like they might say, don't put that on if you're pregnant or around certain pets.
Right.
They'll put that on their sandalwood or something. George Mendes gets that out and does his shirt. Right, and If you want Nevis, you're going to have to give us a seat in your parliament.
Right. You did that with the Saudis?
I say that he did. And I'll just...
Allegedly.
Not often I have to press that in the football is nice section. Because I don't normally defame powerful figures with insubstantiated, made-up stuff just for a laugh.
The new one. I fucking love it. How much?
We got 8 games.
Yeah.
How much?
10 grand.
How much?
10.
How much?
10. It's got
to
be money well spent.
It is 5.
It is 5. Lovely. Them word of days,
weren't
they?
Very good.
Simpler, more innocent times. And now transfers, like, for example, if you take Messi's transfer to, what is it called? Into Miami.
Into Miami, yeah.
David Beckham's into Miami. the MLS itself invest in the transfer. Messi is going to be able to start his own franchise after five years. Adidas, the sponsor of the league and the individual, I think, are contributing to the transfer as well as the club. That's how complex it's become. It's recognised that the sport is not just we've got this little tribe and we'll be playing these other tribes. No, this is a commodity. The broadcast deal, I think the broadcasters are paying him as well. It's all folded in. It's acknowledged what the reality of it is all, you know, is all sort of explicitly like acknowledged in the deal. Hey, before we go into that though, what's that Gary Neville on Dragon's Den? Is that real? I want to check that
out. Guest Dragon,
right, okay. Because that thing really caught on. He's a guest in Dragon's Den, Gary Neville. That sort of makes sense. So when I went on that lad, Stephen Bartlett, the other CEO, the other week, which is the show on which Gary Neville said...
Mini retirements.
I call them mini retirements. I like, I retire at 5 o'clock on Friday, Monday, oh, my retirement's off. Yeah, that's the weekend. That's what that is, mate. And there was a flag, wasn't there, at Glastonbury saying...
How was there?
Mini, that I'm enjoying this mini retirement, or this is my mini retirement, stuff like that. So Gary Neville's going to be... He's going to be
there? Why not? Very successful businessman, isn't he?
Because he's got that hotel where he never greeted me.
Yeah, that's right.
That hotel I stayed at where in my mind...
I think he's got multiple, but he's just done got like a little hotel.
He's got loads of stuff, real estate, all over Salford.
Yeah.
And Salford Football Club.
Right.
And now he's going to be a dragon. Yeah. I don't want to be a dragon.
What have you got? Where's your franchise? You're going to have to get that football team up.
I'm like the Barry Fry pig figure.
Get like David, what's his chops on the phone? Getting football team going again.
Right, lads, we're starting the old team up. As I've told you, free dinner tickets for all of you lot. But I tell you what, I run a tight ship. You'll find me a good leader, but if you mess with me, you are out. As soon as I see anyone do anything, I think I should do it, don't I?
Yeah, you've got to get out of that habit, I think.
You don't want to be on Dragon's
Den. You can't do everything, also. Also, when it came to filming it, you'd be like, I don't want to do this.
I hate it. Yeah. Oh, Russell, we've got to do this 4 o'clock pickup for Dragon's Den. I'm not going.
I'm not doing it.
Get in the car. Can you not wear that shirt? I like that shirt. It's my favourite shirt. The problem is it's strobing. Do you mind if we put this makeup shirt? No, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Can we just put a bit of makeup? No, I only want Nicola to do my makeup. Oh, do you mind standing a bit extra? We've got to do these pickups. No, do it. Just do a reverse. Cut me out of it. Do it. Do a clean single. I ain't fucking doing it. Well, we're glad we booked you. I'm joking.
Someone get Gary on the phone.
Get Gary Neville. I will do it. I'm just going to enjoy this little mini retirement. Russell, could you stop poking Duncan Bannatyne's ball bag with your pen? No, I've got to poke. Okay, I want to see what's inside there. It's part of his secrets, part of his essence. Yeah, no, you're right. Like Jordan Peterson once, in that interview with that lady out of New Statesman, Helen Lewis, like she goes, you know, you wrote this thing saying lobsters have these traits and that's why human beings do it, but you don't write about whales and like female whales are very dominant in their pods. He goes, I can't write a book about everything. Like that was his defence. Like the book can't be about. It's so true. This book's about everything. I've covered that. What? Whales have matriarchs. That's in there. What? George Mendes oils himself up with sandalwood before he does negotiations with the United Arab. Yep, that's all in there. It's verifiable and true. Funny, isn't it?
Yeah, good.
That's what we've got time for. We've got time for all sorts of things. But Football Is Nice is back next week. You can listen to the whole conversation as a podcast. So join us then. Because after all, Football Is Nice. Football is nice.